Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are once again. It is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions can come to us via radio program at AOL.com, and I'm with Layla Mudin, with whom I work on a daily basis at my practice here in Manhattan. Layla's a registered dietitian, and she is the possessor of a master's degree in the field of nutrition. And here we are. We find ourselves on the other side of Labor Day.
Yeah.
And we are now accelerating into fall. Things are, there's a little bit of a chill in the air, and things are accelerating.
Feels kind of good.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a refreshing feeling. And we didn't do too badly this summer, relatively unscathed by some of the brutal weather that has plagued other parts of the country.
Yeah.
With floods and, you know, triple-digit temperatures. And we seem to have, well, knock wood.
Yes.
Dodged a bullet so far here.
So far.
On the East Coast. So before we get to questions, I think there's lots of stories this week. There's lots of very important health stories. Mm-hmm. But I think the one that really is a standout is this new study that has just been released. Diet study suggests it's carbs, not fats, that are bad for you.
You don't say.
Yeah, amazing. it's amazing, isn't it? Like, what a revelation. So what's this all about? Well, I looked up the original study, and it's, of course, in the prestigious medical journal, The Lancet. It is entitled Association of Dietary Nutrients with Blood Lipids and Blood Pressure in 18 Countries, a cross-sectional analysis from what is called the PURE study. PURE stands for, let's see, it's the Prospective Urban-Rural Epidemiology Study. Mm. I was going to work it out so it spells a name.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, PURE sounds good, so.
PURE. It's a PURE.
Find the words.
But, so what they did, I would say this is a pretty big study because they looked at 125,000 participants.
Wow.
In 18 countries. Mm. In North America, South America, Europe, Africa, and Asia. And so this is a big collaborative effort. The study took place over 10 years, from 2003 to 2013, and they looked at the intake of total fat, and they linked, and carbohydrates, and they linked that to markers of cardiovascular risk, such as HDL cholesterol, apolipoprotein A, apolipoprotein B, the ratio between ApoA and ApoB, which reveals cardiovascular risk, triglyceride levels, et cetera, et cetera. And what they found is that, let's see here, let's get the best summary sentence here. They found that precisely what the American Heart Association is currently recommending is the wrong advice, which is substituting for saturated fats using, like, low-fat carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Grains.
Grains, whole grains. Mm. So eat a lot of whole grains instead of eating fat. So, you know, have pasta instead of steak.
Yeah.
Right? So calorie for calorie, same caloric value, had a negative effect on cardiovascular risk. So the effect of isocaloric replacement of saturated fatty acids with other fats, with other fats too, this is the other part of the recommendation, is they say use polyunsaturated fats. I mean, that's the American Heart Association.
Exactly,
right?
Yes.
And so, but let's say you substitute saturated fats with other fats, such as polyunsaturated fatty acids. It's bad for you.
Oh, finally.
The net result, okay? So another offshoot of this, and there's a lot of details in this, and I will report on this in greater detail during my weekend program and maybe during some subsequent podcasts. But, and you can tee off on it on your own.
Sure.
Look at it, and maybe you can do a podcast on this to analyze the data. But another interesting factor was, you know, say, you got to eat lots of vegetables. Like, how many vegetables are you supposed to eat? Like, 8 to 10 servings, 12 to 15 servings? I mean, you're going
to
have...
That's a lot of food, 12 to 15.
No, but I'm saying, you sometimes hear these recommendations that are like, you know, really heavy-duty vegetable intake and fruit intake. They found that there was a benefit of fruits and vegetables, but it topped off at about 3 or 4 per day.
Ha!
And then it flattened out. So it wasn't that too many is bad, but it's like you get, you know, it's attainable, in other words.
Yeah.
So the benefits of fresh fruits and vegetables are attainable with reasonable servings per day.
There we go.
Yeah. So that was another offshoot of the study. Now, pretty big study.
Gee, that's lower on carbohydrate then, isn't it?
Now, let's compare this to a study which launched our infatuation with the low-fat diet, which is, as you have said.
Oh, yes. Ansel Keys, seven countries.
Now, I guess, you know, I'll see your seven and I'll raise you 11.
Yeah.
Up till 18 countries. So would you say that this, and I hate to use the word again, this study trumps the Ansel Keys study?
Absolutely.
Right? Because...
And more about that Ansel Keys seven country study.
Yep.
He actually reduced, it was originally a 22 country study.
Right.
But he cherry picked those seven countries.
I don't like the results from some of those countries. So,
I'm not going to use those countries.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. This is wonderful.
Yeah.
Finally.
Vindication, but you know, still, this is a little bit like the current state of the political discourse in America or arguments about religion. I think people still have their viewpoint and they're going to stick to it even in the face of incontrovertible facts.
Right.
And when it comes to nutrition, frankly, studies go both ways.
Right.
You know, the devil can quote scriptures to his advantage.
Mm-hmm. But nobody can say that the population that they looked at wasn't big enough.
Right.
Nobody can say this study was not long enough. It was over 10 years.
Right.
That's a lot of good...
And it really represents a lot of different cultures.
Yes.
Because
North America,
you might say,
South
there's
America.
Something peculiar about the way that people eat in Norway or something. You know, that you can't base conclusions on what Americans should eat based on what Japanese eat or something like that.
Yes.
But when you look at worldwide trends, and they sort of, you know, if there's
urban and rural.
They might sort of average out and cancel out.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. So, yeah, this is vindication, but it is a little bit like religion, the way people will cling to the science, which actually was not valid, like the Ansel Keys study. It's been debunked many times over. Unfortunately, it's still being quoted along with so many other.
Like the China study and so on.
The China study over and over.
So, my post on Facebook, I posted the article and here's what I wrote. I said, read it and weep, American Heart Association. And I quoted from the article, our data are at odds with current recommendations to reduce total fat and saturated fats. Reducing saturated fatty acid intake and replacing it with carbohydrate has an adverse effect on blood lipids.
Wow.
And I would add, reducing saturated fat and or replacing it with polyunsaturated fat has an adverse effect on blood lipids.
Yes.
So now fish oil technically is polyunsaturated fat.
But it's an omega-3.
But that's an
which
omega-3.
Is shown to be superior
right.
to the other polyunsaturated fats, which are more pro-inflammatory than anything.
Yeah.
So they shouldn't actually be in the same category, in my opinion, the omega-3s, like a fish oil and the omega-6s. They have much more omega-6 pro-inflammatory potential. So we don't.
I would
that.
Venture to say that in this week of, you know, this terrible news and, you know, wall-to-wall news saturation about the hurricane and its aftermath, is that in the field of nutrition, this is the Hurricane Harvey of nutrition.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say, analogize it to that? Because there hasn't been a hurricane as devastating as this for what, maybe a generation.
Yeah.
And this is a generational study in the field of nutrition. You can all these other little studies like eat walnuts or eat almonds or, you know, have olive oil. You know, they're important. But this study is a very, very basic repudiation of the way we've been going in the field of nutrition for a long time.
Yes. What say you, American Heart? So it will be very interesting to see responses from even the vegan sect of nutrition, or the vegetarians, or the ones that are more touting
the starch diet. You know, the
right.
people who say
eat more starch. That's what you want.
Yeah,
that's what your body wants.
That was the title of a book by what's his name?
Dr. McDougall.
McDougall. Yeah.
Yeah, and put a little sugar on it so that you like it.
In fairness to him, he did say that?
Yeah, he said that, and I quoted, put a little sugar on it so that you like it.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, I did a critique a while back on his book.
Okay, you teed actually. Off.
Yeah.
Okay. It's fun to tee off. All right, so before we get carried away with this story, let's get to some questions.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's important to...
This will hopefully go down in history as a watershed article.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is very, very important, and I hope that even university nutrition programs are making note of this.
Yeah.
I may even want to email my previous professors about this, as a matter of fact. Okay. So we have an email from Gail. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I was just introduced to shaga mushroom. Shaga is C-H-A-G-A, mushroom, that claims to benefit the immune system, fight against cancer, reduces inflammation, anti-aging, battling ulcers, gastritis. What are your thoughts about all of this?
Not to be confused with Chagas disease, which is a trypanosomal disease from South America.
Yeah.
Right, which is making a comeback in North America.
Wow.
Shaga.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's in the mushroom polysaccharide family,
yes.
something like that.
Yes.
Immune supportive kind of thing.
Right. It grows on birch trees throughout the northern hemisphere. It resembles more a dark clump of dirt than a mushroom.
Okay.
Yeah, that can't be very savory.
But it's, so are truffles, right?
Yeah,
you know.
So are truffles, exactly. So researchers are increasingly interested. Some studies on mushrooms, shaga mushroom, have yielded positive results. It's a nutrient-dense superfood, number one. It's got B vitamins, it's got D. Well, we know that any mushrooms sun-ripened will contain more D.
That's interesting. Yep.
Like shiitakes.
That's actually, so here's, if you want to get more vitamin D, you should put your mushrooms in the sun.
Hmm, there you go.
Okay, or under an ultraviolet lamp.
Or something.
Right.
Bring it
because
to the tanning booth.
Because they grow in the dark. Bring them in the tanning booth with you.
Because they'll go. Get some more vitamin D both ways.
That's right.
There and with your mushrooms.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. They contain amino acids, copper, fiber, selenium. Preventing and fighting cancer, more researchers are taking seriously the possibility that shaga mushrooms may be able to prevent cancer, slow its growth. There are a lot of other mushrooms involved
in
anti-cancer.
I have to say they're a little on my B list, like the B list mm-hmm. celebrities, who mm-hmm. sometimes are on Dancing with the Stars, like, who are they? I don't remember that guy, but whatever.
Yeah.
Or that gal. But they want a little publicity. Their agent got him a gig on Dancing with the Stars. Shaga is a little bit down the list.
Mm-hmm.
There's other mushroom species, maitake, coriolis,
yes.
cordyceps is another, which is actually it's actually a combination of a cocoon, insect cocoon material and a fungus, sort of a
reishi, I think is another.
Reishi, of course, shiitake,
mm-hmm.
and lion's mane, which has the reputation that it may help with chemo.
Seeing more and
chemo
more about
brain.
Lion's mane.
Yeah, chemo brain, as something to antagonize the adverse effects of chemo while supporting immunity. So shaga is, I guess, in that pantheon.
Uh-huh.
I don't use it that much, but, they all are based on the same principle of what are called polysaccharides.
Mm.
And Impower, for example, which is actually yeast-derived,
mm-hmm.
although it doesn't cause allergy to yeast.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
right. There's something that is immune-stimulatory about mm-hmm. polysaccharides that are derived from myco species.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, supporting the immune system, fighting inflammation, slowing the aging process.
That's a little vague.
It is a little vague.
Yeah.
Lowering blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
In fighting against diabetes.
We know that may help, may also be a characteristic of maitake mushrooms.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Now, how to use these shaga mushrooms? They're available as a supplement. They're in herbal teas. It could be taken that way as well. Any risk of using shaga? It may be dangerous for people taking insulin-lowering or blood sugar-lowering medications.
Yeah, kind of doubt it.
Probably, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, there's one argument to be made is that if you take something that's immunostimulatory and you have an autoimmune disease, that maybe, just maybe, it'll hyper-stimulate your immune system. But that's, okay. I think, more of a theoretical argument.
Okay. All right. Well, Gail, thank you for your question.
Yeah, it's. I think, something that deserves more attention and research. It might be a player.
Mm. We've got an email from Nina. I would like to know what you think of the following. My husband had his prostate removed, and he's reading a book, and in the book it has alternative medication that he would like to take. They are Graviola supplements and Pawpaw. If you could give us some advice if he should consider purchasing these.
Well, what's the aim of that?
Well, to prevent any further cancers.
He had cancer.
Mm-hmm. And he had his prostate removed.
Those are definitely not on my list for secondary cancer prevention after prostatectomy or after a diet. And some men, we just have what's called active holistic surveillance. Mm-hmm. So Graviola is, not associated with protection against prostate cancer, in my opinion. And Pawpaw, it sounds like a very sort of old-fashioned folkloric urinary tract remedy.
Right.
Graviola, I think, if I'm not mistaken, has some properties of reducing urinary tract stones. But
it's also been traditionally used to treat diarrhea, dysentery.
So, I've written several articles on prostate cancer treatment and prevention. I think prostate cancer is eminently amenable to nutritional support with a low-carb diet that is not stoking cancer growth by virtue of its high glycemic index, increasing IGF-1, or insulin-like growth factor. Mm-hmm. Although high protein also can increase insulin-like growth factor.
Right, so but a low-carb diet is a higher fat diet and a moderate protein diet. Protein
so,
things, generally stays moderate.
Things that help, anti-inflammatories like curcumin, kaolic aged garlic extract, in the diet, lots of onions and garlic and scallions, those have beneficial effects. Sulforaphane, DIM from broccoli.
Yes.
Lycopene from tomato sauce in particular. There's some.
What do you think of flax lignans?
And flax lignans certainly. Mm-hmm. And, just a quarter cup of ground flax on your salad or on your vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Or on a dessert. I use it on desserts. Yeah, it's really good.
Throw it into a soup.
Yep. Yep.
Very nice.
So those are some of the things, and probably others off the top of my head. But those two that were mentioned, Pawpaw.
Yeah.
We used to sing a song in camp, picking up pawpaws, putting them in your pocket. And, it was one of those campfire songs.
Pawpaw has actually been successful in certain commercial products that include shampoo, treating infestations of head lice, fleas, and ticks.
Okay.
A series of pesticidal sprays may help with the treatment of oral herpes. Well, herpes simplex virus 1.
These are more sort of folkloric applications and not so much scientifically validated.
Yeah, and as an afterthought, an encapsulated extract has been effectively used by certain cancer patients as a botanical supplement.
Mm-hmm.
But
interesting. Yeah. Well,
there's no magic bullet anywhere.
I think those are sort
anywhere.
Of old school, and they're less validated than some of the more credited therapies.
Hmm. Okay. Nina, best of luck to your husband. We hope he feels better soon.
Certainly vitamin D plays a role in that prevention. Yeah. And
now, her husband should never again have a vitamin D of lower than 55.
Exactly.
And more closer to 70 and 80 would probably be better.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Nina. We have an email from, this can't be the person's name, but I'll just say Summer Light
Okay.
Which is not their email, but they're calling themselves Summer Light.
Maybe they
love that.
Maybe they were born in love during the that. Summer of love, you know, like in Haight-Ashbury or something like Summer Light would be a name.
Summer Light.
It's kind of like a Summer of Love name, you know. Like
yeah.
Hippie parents.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So Summer Light says, hello. I've heard that the oils in nuts and seeds become rancid fairly quickly, thus a double-edged sword. The exception is almonds, which have a tight skin for protection.
Well, yeah.
Care to comment?
I'm going to comment because I've had rancid almonds quite a lot.
I have, yeah.
And they're not really protective.
It's nothing
protective.
To do with the tight skin.
No.
Right.
Nuts that are polyunsaturated have a tendency to go rancid very quickly.
Yeah.
So
very volatile.
Sunflowers, almonds. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed is that even macadamia nuts, which are fairly high in saturated fat content, they can get rancid too.
Yeah.
And there's a distinct taste that I find repugnant. I've thrown out nuts many times because I've either kept them too long or they've been on the store shelf too long.
Yes.
And I will change stores. If they stock rancid nuts, I won't buy nuts from them anymore.
Well, the best place to find our nuts and seeds is in their shells,
okay.
Not necessarily out of a jar or a container.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the best place. And nutcrackers. Does anybody own a nutcracker anymore? I own three. Okay. And lobster.
That's actually a comment on patience.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's the people, they want it now. They don't want to go through the trouble of cracking a walnut.
When you take a walnut freshly cracked out of its shell, it's absolutely delicious.
I should go back to that.
It's so fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a little tray of walnuts, a nutcracker there. It's also a nice
every
tray
night,
to have
virtually,
out.
I have salad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's whatever the vegetables are, they're fresh, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's rare fresh beets and, you know, it's lettuce and romaine and arugula and...
Yeah.
It might be some palm hearts, and it might be some artichoke hearts, and it might be some onions, and it might be some red peppers. But I always put a sprinkle of crushed walnuts on top.
Walnuts, you know, nice.
Because it's a good
walnuts.
Way to get that into your system.
Wonderful. And they're probably the most heart-healthy nut, having a little more omega-3.
A little more omega-3,
than
right.
some of the other nuts.
But rancidity is an issue, and one of the ways to forestall it is I keep them in the freezer even.
Yes, keep them in the freezer. Mm-hmm. If you're buying raw nuts, you could toast them lightly, slightly. But
the toasting thing could still get rancid afterwards.
But then you want to store them in a glass container, either in the freezer or in the refrigerator.
Okay.
Eat them promptly. They don't last for months and months.
Right.
They should not be sitting in your candy dish. Forever and ever and ever.
Right.
I have to remind people how long have those been sitting there? You can taste the difference.
I think some people have lost the discernment that they've never tasted a fresh nut, so they don't even know anymore.
Case in point, tomatoes.
Yeah.
I've not had a good tomato since 1978.
No.
I'm convinced of it.
You don't go to the open markets here?
I have. I'm not impressed. I've gotten the heirloom tomatoes even out east last summer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not impressed. It's not the same. I don't know. Something is just...
Maybe I'm a cheap date when it comes to tomatoes because I am impressed, but maybe I just have lost the...
You've gotten used to.
Gotten used to the mediocre flavor.
Right, right.
Okay.
There was a time recently where my husband
found
some tomato somewhere, and it was the tomato of 1978.
Yeah,
and we never found it
again. It was
almost
like back bread to what it was. But they're trying to sort of re-engineer the flavor characteristics back into tomatoes. They actually have found certain genetic traits that they want to reincorporate in the modern tomatoes because people have just, they voted with their feet. They no longer buy tomatoes. They're so discouraged by the rock-hard, tasteless tomatoes that they get, especially in winter. They're just awful.
This reminds me of Julia Child, what she said about broiler fryer chickens that weren't more than 2.5 pounds. They were quite small. And since they started growing them and growing them faster and making them fatter, they've lost their flavor in the process.
Mm.
And she did claim that there hasn't been a good tasting chicken since 1968 or so. When she was, I remember this quote or something along those lines, and I thought that was remarkable.
That's very Julia Child. Yeah. She used to say, save the liver.
Oh, yes.
Because you got to,
absolutely. That all goes into the soup.
Right.
Yeah.
Save the liver.
So, yes, eat your almonds. Take them out of the shell. We also eat them more slowly that way when we have to fight for them, like pistachio
nuts. That's true. Yeah, it slows.
And it slows you down. You enjoy it longer, and you'll eat less of it.
Got to work for it.
Because you're going to be tired of doing that after a while.
That's right.
Yeah.
And even better is if you are a hunter-gatherer and you have to climb a tree to get your walnuts.
Well, there
you go. You definitely can't gain weight that way.
Good reason to have a walnut tree now right. in the yard.
With that said, let us pause because we divide these podcasts into two parts. Give us a preview, Layla, of what we'll be talking about in part two.
Oh, how do I manage my dysautonomia symptoms?
Ooh, okay. A challenging health problem.
Hmm.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin, our nutritionist in residence, answering your questions on our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is Intelligent Medicine.